Om Shanti. Here at the Brahmakumari's World Spiritual University, we are working to create a value-based society. And for that, we are looking closely at individual values so that that can be developed within the self and by extension in the immediate and far surroundings. Today, I would like to take up the value of unity. Now, we live in a society which is very much based in individuality. This is the quality, the value that is very much praised in the world. And yet, the spiritual value of unity is being promoted as an extremely important quality. And so what does that mean for those of us who have developed in an environment that promotes individuality? One of the analogies is just the human hand. The question arises, which finger is more important? And there are stories about how, you know, each finger will say, well, I'm more important because of my different activities. But the symbol of the human hand is that when all the fingers come together, then only a task can be accomplished. And this is the thing, that as individuals, we may be very capable, very talented, and so on. But in fact, no single one of us can actually accomplish what needs to be accomplished, either for our own selves or for a larger, higher purpose, if we are alone. You know, sometimes I think when anyone puts their name at the end of any book or painting or anything, that you say this thing was done by such and such a person, you know, you'll find if you look closer that there's a lot more other people involved. In books you see how many is the list of acknowledgements. And even if you look within your own self at any of the things that you can say, yes, I did this, but then did you do it all by yourself? And in fact, even if a person does something entirely alone, still you have to look further. Well, what about the equipment? Did you create the equipment yourself? Did you create the circumstances? Did you create the situation where what you did could be useful to other people? And so there's always much more than we realize. And in fact, part of developing a value-based society is to address the aspect of ego that comes automatically when there is this very tremendous praise of just the isolated individual. So let's take a look at how this works and a little bit more about it. Every single individual comes into the world somehow or the other in some kind of a family context. You may have your biological family, or if you don't, and there are people who don't, still, sooner or later, you will find yourself among a group of people which becomes your family. And if you have a feeling of family, that also gives you a feeling of belonging. And every person needs to have a feeling of belonging. You see, if you take the five fingers of your hand and you cut them off and scatter them, they actually can't do anything. They're only really useful when they're connected with the hand, where they belong to the hand, and they work in relationship with each other, either to do something beautiful or to do something useful. You can't even eat without your hand. And the hand is used in so many ways to represent the things that are valuable in human communication. The warmth, the sense of continuity, the sense of companionship is shown by so many indications. And it's really about coming together. for anything to happen that has any real meaning, we must come together. What are the difficulties around coming together? Well, of course, the difficulties are an expression of the differences. And again, looking at the hand, every finger is different from every other finger. But when we come together, it works. In the same way with people, whoever we are with, the people we work with, the people we live with, the people in the group that we belong to, that we are part of, we will find that we come into sometimes clashes with other individuals. And why does that take place? What are the deep secrets that we can discern within that? Because after all, in any great achievement, there's always challenges. We have circumstantial challenges, everybody has those, there are no exemptions. And we also have challenges with people. And those challenges are because of lack of harmony. So unity and harmony are very connected. We cannot work together unless we are in harmony with the people that we work with. We cannot live together unless we learn the dance of harmony that enables life to be experienced as sweet and full of fragrance and meaning. And so there are many, many virtues and qualities that help us to develop a sense of unity. And one very important part of that is appreciation. You know, if we understand our qualities, then we think, well, my qualities should be used. We look at it from that perspective of the self being the center of the universe and everything else is in relation to the self. You know, this is the position of the individual. But when we want to develop unity and we use the perspective of appreciation, then we develop within ourselves an attitude that sees the value of each one that we are connected with. And when we want to see someone's value, we see their specialities, because every single human being has at least one speciality, and of course it's always going to be more than one. So we need to be able to view that person according to their specialities, because if we look at a person in terms of what they don't have, then we are unable to take benefit of their speciality, because our focus is on the deficiency, and so there's automatically going to be disunity. If I look at another person's deficiency, I will feel bad. If I think that another person doesn't like me, then I will start to dislike myself. I will say, I'm very nice, why does this person dislike me? But at the same time, I will think that there must be something wrong with me. Whereas if I look at the person's speciality and I celebrate the differences, then I will look at the other person's relationship with me with an assumption that I am very nice, of course they like me. If I think otherwise, I create dissonance. I don't change anything, I just create dissonance. What I want to create is harmony. So it's very important for me to feel good about how other people feel about me. And if I assume that they feel good about me because I'm good, and then it's very easy for me to feel good about them. Then what happens? A very interesting law of spirituality starts to operate. My assumption that I'm good and they like me coupled with my perspective on their qualities means that that other person will be influenced by my perspective and the atmosphere that my attitude has created, and they will indeed act according to how I think that they are acting. It's a very extraordinary thing, and this use of this spiritual law actually allows us to create an atmosphere of unity in a circumstance where superficially it might seem very disunited. Sometimes for the shift to take place where that feeling of total harmony is really there will take time. There are many, many underlying causes that we understand that create friction between people. And another thing that we can do, which is extremely important, is have faith in others. Having faith in others, even using the very word faith, assumes an act of faith. Superficially, we might have various reasons for thinking, I can't have faith in this person, I can't rely on this person, I have no guarantee. There's a part of us, which is a really very weak part of us, that's always looking for guarantees. And you can never have guarantees. If instead of looking for guarantees, we take a step of faith and we just say to ourselves, and we look at another person and we just know, this person will accomplish this thing. This person will be reliable. This attitude of having faith is again a strong influence, and it causes that person to respond by actually becoming what our good faith is. You see, if we don't have faith, it means that we have fear. It means that we have an expectation that things will go wrong. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Or we might have the attitude, this person can never change. I will never be able to work with this person. The differences are too much. There's no way it can work. Then we make that as a foregone conclusion. And we think that way. We create that atmosphere. And then it can't work, because we have intended that it should not work. But by having faith and by looking for the uniting qualities, we're creating an atmosphere in which that actually takes place. Because the human mind, the human attitude, is extremely influential. And I think people don't really realize this. Now, when you study and practice spirituality and you practice meditation, you actually become very aware of the power of the human mind and the power of the human attitude to transform circumstances and situations. When you turn your attention within and you focus on your own innate qualities, on the essential beauty and purity of the soul, and then you open yourself to the influence of the divine and fill yourself with that, your inner experience is such that not to have faith in people loses meaning, and to have faith in people seems only logical. There is an intuitive sense of the force of having faith in people that causes things to go well. When you practice spirituality, you also understand much more about subtlety. And you become aware that when you do have a thought of lack of appreciation, of doubt in another person, it creates a vibration of instability. It creates interference in the circumstances, the environment, which would otherwise allow your pure thought to become a practical reality. Then another element that's extremely important is to think of oneself more as a conduit for good things to happen rather than as the instigator. You see, because if we consider ourselves as a conduit, it means we're allowing something greater to pass through us and to occur. This is a very important part of spiritual purpose. It means that the intention behind which we do something is not based on what we might call a selfish motive, but why do we want to do something? Because it's good, because it makes sense, not because I want to do something, but rather I see that something, if it could happen, would be good. And the same eye that allows me to see that something would be good also allows me to see the other conduits that come together, and there becomes a dance of good things happening. Then, what is the benefit experienced? When you do something good from a non-selfish perspective, what do you experience? Right away, there is a return for that action, which we study in terms of karma philosophy, but there is an immediate experience that when you do the right thing, the obvious good thing, in conjunction with others, one thing happens, you experience happiness. A kind of happiness that you can't quite put your finger on its source, but you know that whenever you do something of this quality, that happiness always comes to you. Second thing is, it brings you closer to the other people. And when you have a feeling of your uniqueness, your independence, together with the warmth of that closeness, then it's a perfect balance. And when you have that perfect balance, you feel that life is good. So on the one hand, there is that ease of working together with others, of coexisting with other people, coming together for a task, moving apart, coming together with others. It's as if life is really a beautiful dance. You have your moments of solitude, your moments of activity, your moments of watching others act, and always you are appreciating what you're experiencing, the qualities of other people, the warm feeling of kinship. And it's not a dependent kind of a feeling, and it's not one based upon a sense of not knowing who you are, but it's very complementary to the inner solitary experience in your meditation, which is expressed in community as you come into action from that inner spiritual place. And then you begin to have value for the family, value for the community. And you look at everyone with that eye that sees the speciality. And when you see another one's speciality, it's an expression of love. When you express love to another, what happens is that love is returned to you. And so unity is something that is created out of a give and take of love, which comes without some hidden agenda, some other purpose that you would have in mind. Why wouldn't you have any other purpose? Because you feel comfortable with exactly who you are. Why? Because you open yourself to a source of sustenance. That means that you are never compelled to use the energy of other people to complete yourself. But you sustain yourself in your meditation. You draw from the divine and you extend that, and it comes back to you. So there's a flowing movement in a very, very subtle way that also corresponds to the dance of interaction. And at the end of the day, what you feel is very, very good to be you. And you appreciate all those who are with you, and you also appreciate yourself. You take your time of solitude, your time of community, your time of watching, your time of doing, and you have an instinctive, intuitive sense of when to be what, for how long. It's a very, very lovely feeling. And then take a step back and just watch. Watch what is accomplished. And because of your subtlety, because of your spiritual practice, you're able to see things on a variety of levels. I mean, you'll see physically what's right in front of you, and that is amazing enough. But what you'll also see is that very invisible, subtle connectivity that occurs between yourself and the others who you are working with in the pursuit of accomplishing a higher purpose. And you find that each individual who's part of that contains a microcosm of the whole, and that is in your heart. So anyone coming to you will experience not just only you as an individual, but they'll also experience in a very subtle way that your qualities as an individual are set in the context of the bouquet of the others with whom you are working. So now, the